This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us on the program today. We come your way each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer is our host, co-host today, Susan Rode in studio, and we have a very special guest in studio, Tom.
Indeed, Steve. It is our pleasure and privilege to present to our listeners Chief Justice Eric Magnuson of the Minnesota Supreme Court, who will be with us today to talk about the court system in Minnesota and the looming issues posed by the budget constraints that are being discussed at the legislature, as well as changes that are being contemplated for the administration of justice in Minnesota to continue as we have traditionally with the administration of an independent judiciary of really outstanding justice in Minnesota. And as we go into the program, Steve, I wanted to mention that Chief Justice Magnuson cannot, of course, discuss any pending cases or how he would decide any legal issues, but we will take calls in our program, and, of course, we have the text available as well. And sitting next to me is Susan Rode, a co-host as well here today. Susan, good morning.
Good morning to all of you. It's a pleasure to be here and to hear from the Chief Justice today.
And good morning to you, Chief Justice Magnuson. It's really thrilled to have you here. And I understand you have a bit of a childhood connection with WCCO Radio here.
Oh, this is just wonderful. I was shown around the studio, and I got to see the Hall of Fame and where Cannon did his mess, and it was just great. And I related that when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I got a crystal radio, and WCCO came in loud and clear, and I would go to sleep at night at that tender age listening to Honest to Goodness and Gopher basketball games. It was just wonderful.
Yes, nothing finer than hearing Ray Christensen call a Gopher basketball game.
Tremendous.
And for our listeners, Steve, I wanted to mention that before becoming Chief Justice, just a little less than a year ago, when he was sworn in by Governor Pawlenty, Chief Justice Magnuson was an appellate law specialist in Minnesota, recognized as one of our very leading appellate law attorneys here. He also co-authored a leading treatise on Minnesota rules of court and other treatises, as well as serving as an associate professor of law at William Mitchell and the University of St. Thomas Law Schools, and chairing the Commission on Judicial Selection for 5 years. Eric Magnuson is also distinguished in his private practice tenure for his long history of working in the bar on the improvement of the administration of justice, and was widely regarded by his peers as a lawyer's lawyer while serving as a partner and managing partner, indeed, for the Ryder Bennett Law Firm before moving to Briggs & Morgan, from which he was drafted by Governor Pawlenty to be Chief Justice. So, Chief Justice Magnuson, how did you get here?
Well, you know, it's really funny. I remember listening to Boone and Erickson on Saturday mornings as I would drive to work when I was in college. I worked at a pizza place, a bar and a pizza place, and I would listen to them early in the morning. I went to college with no clear idea of what I was going to be. I ended up with a bachelor's in modern European history, which is not worth very much, particularly in today's market, but even back in the 70s, it wasn't worth much. And I had a cousin who said, you should go to law school. And I said, why would I want to do that? She said, it might be fun. You'd do well at it. So I did. And the minute I got to law school, I just fell in love with it. I was really lucky during my tenure in law school. I went to night law school because I couldn't afford to go to day law school, worked full time. But I worked for Doug Amdahl, who was the chief judge of the Hennepin County District Court and widely regarded as one of the premier judges in the history of the state. After that, I clerked for Bob Sharon, who was the Chief Justice of the Minnesota Supreme Court, and fell in love with appeals. Did them pretty much nonstop for the next 25 years after I got into private practice, and appeared hundreds of times in front of our state appellate courts. And when the retirement of Russ Anderson popped up on the radar screen, the governor asked me if I'd take the job, and I couldn't think of anything more fitting than to fill the job that two of my great mentors had had.
Well, it's great to hear that and to offer that encouragement as well to young people starting out in the legal profession. And I know that requests to go into law school are up this year, notwithstanding the economy, so I think that's a tribute to, you know, the kind of court system we have. And, of course, at this stage, the courts in Minnesota and other states of the country face tremendous challenge from the constraints imposed by looming budget and funding shortfalls. And Chief Justice, you've been outspoken, I think it's fair to say, in leading the charge of the bench in attempting to negotiate that through the legislature. And I must say, given your association with Governor Pawlenty, it can't have been an easy thing to take this on.
Oh, you know, it really hasn't been that difficult. You know, I came straight from private practice into my position as Chief Justice, which is a little unusual, not unprecedented, but a little unusual. And I guess I didn't learn all the ways judges are supposed to behave. I saw a problem, and I simply decided I'd confront it directly. I have tremendous respect for the governor. I think he's just an outstanding person and a very savvy politician. But he has his job and I have my job. And, you know, he and I never shied away from having honest disagreements and honest discussions. And I've found him to be very open. And he doesn't agree with me all the time, but that doesn't mean we can't have pretty direct conversations.
I suppose in a way this really underscores the importance of having an independent judiciary.
Absolutely. You know, I'm always amazed at what people see behind the scenes, or they think they see behind the scenes, and it just isn't there. You know, the governor asked me if I'd be the Chief Justice. I agreed. I've taken the job, and since then we've had nothing but the most cordial and professional relationship. And he wouldn't have picked me, I think, if he hadn't thought that I'd be independent.
One of the themes, of course, we're going to focus on is the impact of the potential budget restrictions for the court system. And maybe you could, if you wouldn't mind, give us just a very brief, short overview of that, and then we'll circle back to that here after the break.
Well, let me talk a little bit about the judicial system first so that your audience has some perspective. We've got almost 3,000 employees in the state judicial system. We're divided into 10 judicial districts. We cover the whole state. There are 300 and some judges, 289 of them are trial judges, and we handle 2 million cases a year. So we really are a busy court. The average judge in Minnesota handles 7,000 cases, which is 50% higher than most judges in comparable areas around the country. We have a great justice system here.
We have more coming up. Chief Justice of the Minnesota State Supreme Court, Eric Magnuson, in studio today. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rode, host today on the program. It is Minnesota Law each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Minnesota Law continues, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Program comes your way each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rode are the co-hosts of the program today. Our guest in studio, Chief Justice of the Minnesota State Supreme Court, Eric Magnuson.
And Chief Justice, before we broke, you were talking about the structures of the courts in Minnesota. I'm wondering, how are the budget cuts that are being talked about right now going to impact those districts, and what are some of the changes we can look for?
Well, Susan, as I was saying just before the break, you know, our courts handle about 2 million cases a year. Now, the vast majority of those are relatively minor. They're traffic and parking and misdemeanors, but we handle first-degree murder cases, you know, big commercial litigation. We handle marriage dissolutions, juvenile, probate, mental health. We started out last biennium, and our budget is about $300 million a year, and we get that in two-year chunks. We started out $23 million short, and then in the for fiscal year 08 and 09, we ended up $19 million short. And what you have to understand is that 85% of the court's budget is people. It's all the people at the court counters and the clerk's office that handle and process all the paperwork that goes with the justice system. If we are short of money, then we end up short of people. We came into the biennium operating 9% short-staffed. If our budget is cut, we're going to have to lay off people. And what happens when you lay off people, or you have a hiring freeze and you don't hire people, is that there are fewer people to do the work. And so we're trying to figure out a way to do things more efficiently, you know, less paperwork, more computerized records. But that takes money too. So, you know, the bottom line is when our budget is cut, we just can't provide the service that we would otherwise provide. We don't have enough judges, but that's not the real bottleneck. It's the people.
And I noticed just recently that many of the districts have closed their clerk's offices and their courthouses for half a day or a day a week.
Yeah, you know, I went to Wabasha to visit a drug court program, and I walked up to the courthouse there, and there's a sign on the door saying district court closed Thursday mornings because of budget cuts. And the reason they do that is that they don't have enough people to man the counter and do the paperwork, so they've got to close the counter so they can be working in the back. And I thought, well, that's interesting. They're closed and I'm here, but I'm the Chief Justice, so I'm sure that won't affect me. I got into the courthouse. I couldn't find anybody to talk to me. Everything was locked up tight, and I started knocking on the door. Now, there's a rumor in Wabasha that I pounded on the door, and I want to – that's not the case. I did not pound on the door. But I knocked politely, insistently, and they didn't answer. I finally got a deputy to let me in, and I went to the head clerk down there, and I said, you know, how come you didn't answer the door? And she said, look, if we answer the door for you, we got to answer it for everybody. And we just can't get our work done. And, you know, I mean, that's humorous. But if you drive, you know, a half an hour, 40 minutes to go to court to take care of something and they find the counters closed, it's not so funny. And we don't have enough people to keep the courts open all the time right now.
And where would this money come from? What are the potential funding sources? Because I think people that have any involvement in court or having to deal with the traffic citation here, court costs, those types of things, is that where the money comes from?
Well, it's where some of the money comes from, although the fees and fines that the courts levy usually go to the state or to the municipality or the local body of government that's enforcing the legislation or the laws. We abandoned a long time ago the old justice of the peace model, where the justice of the peace salary depended on how many convictions he got. And, you know, it's a myth that cops get paid extra for writing more tickets. The courts are funded by appropriations from the legislature. Article 1, Section 1 of the state constitution says the object of government is to provide for the security, safety, and benefit of the people. And you do that, among other things, by having a functioning judicial system. The court system costs less than 2% of the state budget. And you know, you'd think that it wouldn't be that hard to come up with adequate money for the courts, but everything is getting squeezed now. My plea to the governor and to the legislature is that there's not going to be enough money. You've got to make choices. Choose the courts, because the courts are a core function of government.
Chief Justice Magnuson, we talked about, you know, inconvenience for people. What about the impact on public safety and just the enforcement of legal rights if the budget cuts that are currently proposed are enacted?
You know, it's really huge. I went on a tour of the state having press conferences all over where we would get local law enforcement and prosecutors and public defenders up on the podium with me. And the one thing that you heard consistently from the sheriffs and the chiefs of police and the county attorneys is that if you stop enforcing the what you'd call relatively minor laws, it's the start of sweater unraveling. You know, if you, for example, we made a list of the 51 case types that we handle in the Minnesota judicial system when it looked like we were going to have a 10% budget cut. And the governor said, you know, tell us what will happen if we cut your budget 10%. So we said, okay, we do 51 case types. 21 of them we're just not going to get to. We have to deal with the felons in custody, the murder cases. We have to process marriage dissolutions. We have to handle some other things. But, for example, underage drinking won't be prosecuted as a crime. It'll be handled as a civil offense, so it'll be a fine. And law enforcement is just really upset about that because today's unprosecuted underage drinking is tomorrow's DWI and is the criminal vehicular homicide after that.
We have a break coming up momentarily. We'll have much more with Chief Justice of the Minnesota State Supreme Court, Eric Magnuson, in a moment. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rode, our co-hosts on the program today. Minnesota Law comes your way each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. You can also find Moss and Barnett online at moss-barnett.com. We're going to take a break right now for the news and weather. We'll come back in a moment. Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rode, our hosts, our very special guest in studio, Chief Justice of the Minnesota State Supreme Court, Eric Magnuson. Phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We go to Jason in St. Cloud. Jason, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, and thank you very much for taking my call, Chief Justice.
Good to hear from you.
Mike, you got to hear me out because I'm actually a St. Cloud State senior going for criminal justice, and I would wish to become a police officer or somewhere in the criminal justice system. Well, with all the budget shortfalls, it's getting me really worried to see if I'm even going to get a job, you know, because obviously that's how I get paid. Well, what I've been looking up a lot is on the internet, there's this thing called the Minnesota PP law, or the psychopathic personality law. And what I've been looking at is they are housed in Moose Lake, and per person, it's running us about $568 a day. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want these monsters out either. But my question is, is there a way that you think that we could keep them locked up but not, you know, use all that money per day? Because wouldn't it be cheaper just to put them in prison than keep them there?
Well,
that's kind of what I'm trying to save us money, and, you know, hopefully I get a job.
Well, thanks for the call. You know, the fact of the matter is that those folks either have served their time or have been diverted into the mental health arena. It does cost a lot of money to keep people in prison. You know, it costs $35,000 a year to keep folks in jail as well. So you're not going to save an awful lot of money. What we try to do in the court system is figure out alternatives to incarceration. And we've got a really good program in this state, what we call problem-solving courts, DWI courts, drug courts, where instead of arresting somebody with an addiction problem and throwing them in jail, we try to divert them into a program that will get them some counseling, some treatment, and cure their addiction. We have 42 drug courts or specialty courts in Minnesota. They're called problem-solving courts. They're highly effective. They significantly increase the rate at which people get out of the system and don't come back. It costs a lot of money on the front end of it. $4 or $5 million is what we're looking for from the legislature to keep our specialty problem-solving courts functioning. But we save so much money on the back end. Exactly what you're talking about. We have less time in jail. We have people who get back into society, get jobs, pay taxes, take care of their kids. It's a big problem, and I appreciate your calling it to the public's attention. It's one that we're working on. But we get back to the budget. You've got to spend some money to save some money. And so the treatment programs are absolutely essential to making the system work.
Chief Justice, I think sometimes we have the misconception that one way to save money is perhaps to eliminate the budget for public defenders who defend people who stand accused of criminal offenses, and that if we didn't have the public defenders, we would just be able to convict folks faster, more efficiently, save money, et cetera. But does it really work that way?
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, it works just the opposite. When we realized the budget crisis that we were going to be facing, I formed something called the Coalition to Preserve the Justice System. And you have to understand that we have a justice system in this state. We just don't have courts. We have prosecutors. We have law enforcement. We have public defenders. We have civil legal services. And if all of those parts of the machine aren't working, the machine doesn't work. The biggest advocates, in my experience in the past few months, for adequately funding the public defenders have been the county attorneys. The Constitution guarantees defendants the right to be represented by a lawyer. If their lawyer isn't there, or if their lawyer is trying to juggle way too many cases or has to be in two courtrooms at once, the judge sits around and waits. The prosecutors sit around and wait. The whole system bogs down, which gets me back to the, you know, we're 2% of the court budget, but not funding, or I'm sorry, 2% of the state budget, but not funding the justice system adequately has tremendous consequences for all the citizens of the state.
Still, I hear comments to the effect that people wonder, well, why can't the courts take their fair share of the hit? Why should they come ahead of the disabled or the elderly, public education, transportation funding, and the like?
Well, you have to look at what the courts do and what they do for people. I've had people say, you know, why should you come ahead of kids and old people? And I said, well, you know, we are kids and old people. We are the system that protects the rights of juveniles who are in bad situations. You know, we are the ones that you'll turn to deal with the legal rights of the elderly. I'll give you an example. The Attorney General introduced a bill, and I don't know where it is now, on reverse mortgage fraud to protect the elderly from losing their life savings in their home. That's probably a pretty good law. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but if you don't have a court system that can adequately protect the rights given by that statute, then you might as well not pass the law. And if I don't have enough money to run the courts and have to choose between handling first-degree murder cases and a really important case like reverse mortgage fraud, I've got to go with the serious criminal case first. So we need to be adequately funded.
So if it comes down to a matter of, as it were, rationing justice or the administration of justice, you have to pick based on what, the hierarchy established by the Constitution and other laws?
That's one of the things. We took, as I said earlier, we took the 51 case types that we had and we decided which were highest in importance, which were middle in importance, and which were not unimportant but relatively less important, and came up with 21 things that if we don't have enough people, those are the things we're not going to get to first. My point is you shouldn't have to ration justice. It's 2% of the state budget. You ought to be able to make a choice to adequately fund the judiciary and then worry about all the other things that are bigger money problems but have nowhere near the impact.
And, of course, we hear talk as well about the stimulus package funding. Is any of that money going to be available for our Minnesota courts to help alleviate this shortfall?
Yeah, we're working hard to get as many grants as we can from the stimulus funding. Unfortunately, it's a kind of a competitive process, and so you have to put in your application and hope that you come out well. We're particularly targeting drug courts, specialty courts for funding. And the good news is there's some money there that can help us close the gap. The bad news is it's one-time money. It'll help us in the next biennium, but then we're going to be right in the same spot the biennium after that. So we're trying to do a combination of getting the one-time money and becoming more efficient as we can.
We're going to want to talk about some of the things that are in the works for the administration of justice, but one of those, as I understand it, is that fees may have to be increased for a variety of court services and possibly even charges for criminal matters and the like. Is that right?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that's where it looks like we may end up. The House budget recommendation ends up cutting the judicial branch by 0.79%, which is really not bad, but they do it by increasing filing fees. For example, the initial filing fee in a district court civil lawsuit is going to go from $240 to $300. If you're going to file for a divorce, you pay $270 for the filing fee now. After the legislation passes, it's going to be $330. And that may not seem like a lot to any individual, but, you know, if you're struggling to get your marriage dissolved and, you know, there's never enough money to go around. Susan knows that. It's going to add up. And I would hate to think that we're going to deny people access to justice, but, you know, we've got to close the gap somehow.
Well, I know in my practice, and I know Susan has the same issue in hers, it's not just the initial filing fee for a litigation, but as well we now have to pay a fee to have a court hear a motion or to decide a dispute that might develop during the case. And, of course, if we want a trial by jury, there's an extra fee for that. So these are not inconsequential costs that are being absorbed by private party litigants, as you say, Chief Justice, at a time when money is especially tight. And so I'm also wondering if we look down the road, are there other plans that perhaps could streamline or make the administration of our judicial system more efficient, perhaps eliminate any redundancies?
Yeah, we're working really hard. We had a committee called the Access Service and Delivery Committee that we put together to see what kind of immediate short-term changes we could make in processing. And then they're also looking at longer-term plans. We have started now a program of what we call e-citation, where we hope to get the squad cars equipped with computers that can take electronically the information on a ticket, for example, and transmit it to the court computer system. And so it cuts way down on the paperwork that has to be done. And if you don't have paperwork, then the people who used to handle the paper can go do other things like answer the counter when I knock on the door.
Very good. And I imagine there are other ways that the court can take advantage of the Internet age and do more things electronically as well that perhaps are not yet in place. But I imagine also that costs money up front as well for the investment.
Well, it does. You know, we're looking at centralizing a lot of the court administrative functions right now. We're what we call flattening the management structure of the court system. You know, we've got these 10 judicial districts. Well, we've actually got one court administrator administering two judicial districts now just to save money. We've combined human resources departments. A lot of counties share services with other counties. We've got a project underway now to take all of the collection part of the civil fine or the misdemeanor fines and things and put it in one spot so that we don't have each county duplicating the efforts of others. We might be able to get by with significantly fewer people, but that means we've got to have some computers. It means we've got to have some a big backbone for the internet connection, and so you got to spend some money to save some money. But we're working hard on that.
There was one thing I've learned over the past year in this program is that there are alternatives to the court system. What about some of those alternatives? Certain disputes keeping them out of the courts and new ideas in that area.
Alternative dispute resolution covers a lot of things. It covers mediation, it covers private arbitration, and it's really been valuable in the system. The problem with using it is that it's expensive. Parties who want to have a private arbitration end up hiring and paying for the arbitrators, and the arbitrators, they want the best, so they go get really high-powered lawyers who know what they're doing, and they cost a lot of money. As Susan knows, it can be very expensive in family law, and Susan is part of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, who has just been wonderful in volunteering their time to do a lot of that in family law cases on a pro bono basis.
And it's been very rewarding work, actually, but there is a tremendous need. And, of course, you know, the problem we're going to run in down the road is private lawyers can only provide so much of that service. And it's a good stopgap for the moment, but it's going to have its own challenges down the road.
You know, somebody asked me, they said, well, you know, you keep saying we've got such a great justice system here in Minnesota. Do we really need a great justice system? Isn't okay good enough? You know, can't we be like... And then they mentioned a state that I won't mention it, but, you know, just fill in the blank. And, you know, it's a matter of really being penny wise and pound foolish. You can cut back on the justice system, but then, as the caller said, people are going to stay in jail longer. That's going to cost more time. You're going to be shifting the costs to the counties. They don't have enough money. You're going to be, just the emotional and financial cost to people, for example, who are fighting over custody or trying to get a divorce or trying to get a real estate issue resolved. There's a cost for everything you do. And it, in my view, a fully functioning, well-funded justice system is the best way to spend state money.
We will take a break. We have much more coming up. Our final segment of the program is next. Chief Justice of the Minnesota State Supreme Court, Eric Magnuson, in studio. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rowan, our co-host on the program today. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rohn, co-hosting the program today. Chief Justice of the Minnesota State Supreme Court, Eric Magnuson, in the studio today. We go to the phones. Chris in Big Lake, you're on the air. Hello, Chris.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I have a question to do with our senatorial election, and it's a two-part question. So one is, first part is, when we recounted the votes to see who was going to actually win this election, I was under the belief that the Minnesota Supreme Court oversaw the proceedings and counted everything to be correct. So how can Norm Coleman ask to appeal his case to the state Supreme Court if they've already kind of been involved in the process? Thanks.
Good question. I was on the state canvassing board, and it's a good story on how that came about. I'd been on the job about 2 months, and I got an email from Secretary of State Ritchie, and it said, under the Constitution, the state canvassing board has to have two Supreme Court justices and two trial judges in the Secretary of State. Who would you like to have on the canvassing board? And I turned to my assistant, and I said, Barb, what is this? I've never heard of this before. And she says, oh, that. That's no big deal. You just go over and you get a report, and it's about 20 minutes. You sign some stuff, and it's fine, which is how it had been for about the last 45 years. So I sent an email out to the rest of the court and said, who'd like to be on the canvassing board with me? And eventually Helen Meyer and agreed for the primary, and Barry Anderson for the general election. But, we really – it's always been that you just go over and it's a formality, and it wasn't. But anybody who thinks that there was some, well-considered strategy on how we got on the canvassing board is just wrong. I passed out an email and I got some volunteers. Because the Constitution says we have to have two Supreme Court justices on the canvassing board, Justice Anderson and I fulfilled that duty, and everybody could see on TV and the internet what we were doing. The rest of the Supreme Court didn't have anything to do with that, and they are considering certain legal challenges that I can't comment on. I'm not involved in those, nor is Justice Anderson, because they will in part be reviewing the work we did on the canvassing board. All I can say is that I was proud of my service. I thought it was very transparent. I was happy that people could see what we were doing, and I'm really glad it's done for me.
There's a major event coming up, the fishing opener, and you'll be with the governor on White Bear Lake. They're going to do the opener in the metro area.
Yeah, it's going to be great. When the governor called me 5 years ago and asked me to chair the Judicial Selection Commission, I said, well, okay, but there's a price. And there's a long pause, and he says, what's that? And I said, I get to go on the fishing opener with you every year. He says, oh, that's great. You got to pay your own way anyway, which I do. Yeah, it's going to be on White Bear Lake, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. The governor and I usually place some sort of friendly wager on who's going to catch the – he keeps saying biggest fish because he tends to catch northerns. I keep saying biggest walleye, but we'll get that worked out.
But I hear the First Lady puts both of you to shame.
She's wonderful. She's got much better touch than the governor. The person who really catches a lot of fish, though, is the lieutenant governor. She's a tremendous fisherman. She keeps everything she catches. That's kind of what she'll come in and say, well, I got 22 fish, and half of them are sunfish.
Chief Justice, are you enjoying your new position, relatively new position?
You know, I really am. It's been a big change from private practice. It wasn't a complete surprise to me what the job entailed because I had been a law clerk for the Chief Justice 30 years ago. But, you know, we didn't even have computers then. Everything was done on typewriters. And I remember my secretary saying, you get two drafts of everything. You get a first draft and you get a final draft. And in between, and she gave me a pair of scissors that is so big, I still have it. You can cut a whole sheet of paper sideways in one swoop. She says, in between, use these. Well, it's real different now. But the process of deciding cases is largely unchanged. I feel really fortunate to be where I am now, and it's a lot of fun.
Great. We are so thrilled that you were able to be with us here today, and I know that Susan joins me in echoing that sentiment.
Yes, absolutely. It has been a pleasure working with you over the last year since you've been on the court, Justice Magnuson, and more good things to come, I'm sure.
Thank you for having me. It's really been a pleasure.
Thanks so much, and a big show next week, Tom.
Yes, that's right. We'll have our partner here, Phil Young, to talk about the rights and legal remedies and protections that benefit sales representatives and independent commission sales agents in Minnesota.
That is coming up next week at noon. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday. Once again, thanks to Tom Schroer and Susan Rode. As always, Dennis Matuzak, our studio coordinator, Jim Ingblom, the czar of the green room, always helping out. And big thanks again to Chief Justice of the Minnesota State Supreme Court, Eric Magnuson.